very good class. Very good. Good evening. How are you this evening? My name is Denise Lucy. I am a professor of business leadership, and it's my honor to join you tonight to learn more about Jane Lynch and her life. How many students do we have here tonight? Oh, that doesn't sound like too many. How many? Oh, there's more. There are more now. That's great. It's wonderful to have you here tonight, my student colleagues and our community members. How many of you are here tonight? All right. As you may know, of course, Dominican University of California's Institute for Leadership Studies has a lecture series in the evenings with Book Passage, and this is that series. And it's exciting to have you here each time. We're thrilled to be partnering with Bill and Elaine Petricelli and their fabulous team. And may we thank them for their support and their partnership. Thank you so much. You know, we also have a program in the mornings called the Business Edge Breakfast Briefings. And we do that in partnership with the North Bay Leadership Council. In fact, the CEO of that council is here tonight, Cynthia Murray. Where are you, Cynthia? Thank you, Cynthia. And we actually, Cynthia and I had a project last week with Book Passage. We had a great speaker. Her name was Betsy Myers. And Betsy has written a book on leadership. She works for Harvard University, and she also has worked for President Obama when she was his COO, and has worked for President Kennedy. Had so much important things to say about what does it mean to be a leader? What does it really mean? And how important it is to be authentic as a leader. And I think that the story that we'll hear tonight is really about someone who has inspired, motivated so many of us. She really comes across as who she is, doesn't she? As an authentic person? Yes, I think so. And we've experienced that already this evening as she's joined us on our campus. It's absolutely thrilling to have her here. And we hope that you will join us again. In fact, before I introduce Richard Stone, who will introduce Ms. Lynch, I wonder, Rachel, if we can show some of our upcoming events that we have here in the hall. We have some lectures coming up in October. David McCullough is coming. What is that date? October 13th. I hope you'll join us that night. Bill Bryson is October 24th. And Chris Matthews, November 9th. We have an additional person joining us that is not in the schedule, but that should be on the slides. And that is Dr. Andy Weil on November 17th. Some of these programs do require a ticket purchase, so please do go to bookpassage.com. And make sure that you join us on those evenings. We really appreciate it. An important leader in our community, both in Marin, Northern California, and certainly at Dominican, is a man named Richard Stone. He is a member of our Board of Trustees here at Dominican, and he's the CEO of Private Ocean, a wealth management firm, who has helped us support this program this semester. We want to thank him. Will you please thank him for helping us bring these lecturers here? So I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Richard Stone.
Good evening. As a member of Dominican's Board of Trustees, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to the Leadership Lecture Series hosted by Dominican's Institute for Leadership and the School of Business and Leadership. This lecture series is an opportunity to welcome our neighbors and friends, to join our faculty and students as we learn of ideas and actions of leadership by individuals seeking to promote constructive change in our world. As always, our partner for this evening's lecture and book signing is Book Passage. Please join me in thanking Book Passage and Elaine and Bill Petricelli for being such vibrant resources for learning in our community. And thank you to Dominican Student Leadership Ambassadors for volunteering as tonight's ushers. In recent years, we have welcomed to Dominican leaders of the worlds in the worlds of business, politics, literature, psychology, civil rights, and entertainment. Tonight's guest is probably one of the most popular and entertaining women on television. In Hollywood speak, Jane is hot. She has received an Emmy, Golden Globe, People's Choice Award for her work in Glee. Many of us have also enjoyed her performance in Christopher Guest's Best in Show. But her rise to fame did not happen overnight. In fact, Jane Lynch did not make it big until her 40s, after she battled alcoholism, anxiety, learned to embrace her sexuality, and accepted that life is sometimes a series of opportunities that come after what seem, at the time, like disappointments. This evening, she will introduce her new book, Happy Accidents. The book is part comic memoir of behind the scenes in Hollywood, part inspirational narrative about self-acceptance, and 100% entertaining, just like his author. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jane Lynch.
Thank you very much. You don't mind if I open up my chilled Pellegrino? It's in my contract. It's so funny, I don't know that I've ever stood at a lectern before. This is a great school. I'd never heard of you before. It's amazing. And I love Spanish architecture, and this building alone, my God, that's a big picture of me. A little bit of Photoshop, not much. It's gorgeous here, and I love this part of the country, and it's such a tiny school, and so wonderful. I've met so many wonderful people at the VIP thingamajob over at the Job Magoog, and signed some books, pressed some flesh, you know, sold a couple books. Did my job. And the volunteers back there helping me out, turning me on to some new websites to buy furniture at. We've been all over the map in terms of our conversation back there. I call the book Happy Accidents, and it's kind of a euphemism, if you will. I have found in all my 51 years, as I look back, that, I know I look much younger, thank you. That, you know, I did have a lot of anxiety as a kid. And as Richard was explaining who I was, it sounded like I was a total mess, filled with anxiety, battling alcoholism and alienation. And I was truly a mess, actually. But I always thought that the party was going on somewhere else than what was happening right in front of me. I always thought it was over there, and it was with those people, and why do I have to hang out with these people? Why do I have this job when I want to have that job? And it's turned out as the greatest things that have happened to me in my life are things that I kind of looked askance at. That, now, you might call them happy accidents, but actually I believe they were my life taking care of me. And I guess if I have a message, especially for kids who are the age that I was when I was at the height of my anxiety, which would have been 1920, I would say, not in 1920, I was 19, 20. Come on, people. Back in the Bronze Age, when I was in adolescence, I would say that what was right in front of me, what I was doing in the moment, was so much more important than the party I wanted to be invited to, or the group of people I really thought I needed to hang out with, or the kind of theater I thought I should do. Case in point, I graduated from Cornell University I got an MFA in theater, And so I came out of there classically trained and arrogant and, you know, better than everybody else. And I joined a Shakespeare company, and I alienated everybody because I had respect for the bard's language, and they, had, of course, didn't have my training. And when deep down inside, I really just wanted friends, and I pushed everybody away. So I got kicked out of the, actually I left, but they were basically saying, don't let the door hit you in the butt on your way out. So I thought, I'm looking around to be on a, you know, in a classical company or a repertory company, some kind of a theater company. I always knew I'd play the comic role, but I didn't think sketch comedy was something I wanted to do. And I would send out resumes every week, and Second City took the bait. And they said, come to this audition. And I auditioned with probably 200 or 300 people to be in a touring company, and they were casting, I think, 7 people, only 2 women at that time. And I was one of the 2 women that they cast, and it blew me away. I didn't feel that I did particularly well in the audition. I had fun, but the idea of improvising scared the hell out of me because I'm a control freak, and I need to know what the lines are, what the parameters are. I don't, that free form thing, the creative equivalent of jumping off a cliff, was not what I enjoyed doing, and yet here I am, I'm being told I'm cast, and I'm going to be paid, and I'm going on the road, and it was, all right. And I found the form that I'm supposed to be in. It suited my talents, it suited my temperament. I love playing a ton of different roles. In one evening, I'm not the greatest singer in the world, but I got to sing 3 or 4 songs a night, and it was a great, really a wonderful, heady time, and I found where I was supposed to be. But if you had asked me, I would have thought that I'm supposed to be over there. So basically, that's kind of what the book is about. I didn't set out to write a book so much. It was a happy accident, if you will. I've been speaking at organizations, mostly like gay organizations, HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, and others. And yeah, really great organization. And you always have to give a speech, and inevitably, for me, it would always, I'd get very personal because it's how I roll. It's just how I work. And I would try, like, I'd go into the speech going, you know, I'm not going to reveal too much. I'll just speak in general terms. And then I, of course, I'm like, and I was in tears and doubled over. And so I started putting this stuff together because I had another speech coming up, and I thought I would just kind of rip myself off and use stuff from other speeches. And I was working on it with my wife, and, you know, we're still, you know, although we know we've been married 1.5 years now, and we've known each other, thank you, 2 years. You know, in a way, we're really still getting to know each other, and it's so far so good. But we're really getting to know each other. So we started putting this, you know, she started helping me and asking me questions, and then I met a literary agent who said, you know, you ever think of writing a book with that? And I was like, oh, yeah, why not? And that's also one of the things that I did write in my life, is that I said yes to everything. And so when they asked me to do, oh God, I'm all over the place. But anyway, let me get to finish this point. So I said, yes, I will write a book if you get me a deal. And he got me a deal with a publisher. And they gave us 4 months. I say us because my wife is truly the co-writer. Her name appears nowhere on the book. Too bad. I'm the star. I'm in the tracksuit, okay. Not you. Oh. And she's fine with that, but I do make a point of, you know, this book would not be up there, or anywhere, if it weren't for her. So anyway, that's how the book started. In fact, the title came before the book. Because as I was looking back, I said, you know, everything seems like a happy accident, but it really wasn't. And that's a Shakespeare phrase, by the way. I'm still very arrogant about my Shakespearean training. Happy accidents is from Twelfth Night, Malvolio. So anyway, let me go back to this point of, and then I'm going to take questions. I said yes to everything. One of the things I talk about in my book, I was 14 years old, and I knew I wanted to be an actress. Like I knew I was gay. I don't know when the moment was that it occurred to me. It was something, both those things I've known about myself for as long as I've had consciousness. And so I'm 14 years old, and I auditioned for my first play in high school, and I'm cast, starting a pattern of playing roles that originally written for men. I'm cast as the king in a play called The Ugly Duckling, which was a short one-act version of The Princess and the Pea story. And I auditioned for it, and everybody was like, wow, who's this person? She's funny, and look, she's doing the male role. Isn't it funny? And ha, ha, ha. And they cast me, and I was so excited. After the first rehearsal, I quit. And at the time, I didn't know how to process it. But the reason I quit in retrospect was that I was face-to-face with my destiny, and it scared the hell out of me. What if I fail? Then what do I have left? I mean, that's how badly I wanted to do it, that I walked away from it. And after that, and I suffered so much over the fact that I did that. I worked on the stage crew for that play when I could have been in it. And I kept coming back for more. I couldn't get cast in high school. I was considered uncastable in my little high school because I had quit. So I didn't get any other parts until, I know it's so sad because I wanted it more than anybody. And finally in my senior year, I got to do Godspell because I was in a class that, you know, they had to give you a part. And it was a time of my life. But after that, on some level, I vowed never to say no to anything ever again, and I never have. I always say yes, except to porno. I won't do porno. I haven't been asked. And it kind of hurts my feelings. But you got to use your judgment. But I said yes to everything, which means you'll look at my IMDb page online, and I've got about 192 things that I've done. And some of them great, like a small role in Frasier, and then in a show of, you know, Joe's life, playing the saleswoman, whatever Joe's life is, you know. And so I said yes to everything, which was really great, because when the opportunities came along, I was prepared. You know, like the big stuff, like when Christopher Guest, I ran into him in a restaurant, happy accidents, and he said, will you be in this movie? I'm, yes. Now, and who would say no? But not only did I say yes, but I walked into the most uncertain set of given circumstances for a movie. There is no script. It's all improvisation, which I hate, but I keep getting cast in it. I keep getting thrown into improv, and now I just embrace it and go, you know, you're good at it, leave it alone. And I showed up every day, you know, full of false confidence, and before you know it, I'm actually feeling confident. So saying yes was a big part of it, and it kept me prepared for when those big things did come along, like Saturday Night Live came along. They said, will you do Saturday Night Live? Yes. Yes, I'll do it. That scares the hell out of me. It's an uncertain thing. It's live. And then hosting the Emmys. Will you host the Emmys? Yes. Thank you. Yes. You know, I could have squirmed out of that and fooled myself into thinking that I had a reason, you know, like, oh, you know what, I'm not a host. I don't do hosting things, but thank you for asking, Mark Burnett. No, I just went, yes. So there's a lesson for you young people. So I would love to answer questions. Are we going to turn up house lights, or am I just going to fish around in the dark? I don't know. I'm also hot flashing, like you would not believe. So yeah, anybody have a question? And if I can see you? Are we gonna do microphones and stuff? Oh, great, okay.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Over here.
Voice of God. Hi, sweetie.
Hi, I'm Amber.
Amber.
I'm a huge Gleek, like, as you can tell by my shirt.
Oh, good for you.
I love you. You're amazing.
Thank you.
I don't know how to expand on that. But my question is, if you were to choose any career choice besides acting, what would it be and why?
Oh, I'd be in such trouble. Really. I have no skills for anything else. I have no ambition for anything else. You know, I'm a good little worker bee. I would probably find some way to help somebody and just be a kind of an assistant of some sort. I'm good at details, and maybe I'd find someone interesting who's doing an interesting job, and I would be their assistant. But other than that.
You could rock anything, Jane, believe
me.
Oh,
God bless you.
I love Thanks. You. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, go ahead. Use your voice. Yeah, well, everything that she asked about alcoholism helped or hindered my career. Well, let me tell you that quitting drinking was part of the process of me getting to know me a lot better and me getting to face the shadows inside of me, which is actually the stuff of great art. And before that time, before I got sober and started working on myself, and this has been a long process too. I didn't like get sober and all of a sudden... You know, I had to go through, you know, my paces. I found that the stuff that I was afraid of inside of me, that alienated, lonely kind of little girl that lived in me, actually had so much to offer. And I found such liberation in that exposure. I eventually ended up getting a really good therapist who was sober as well, and going to, which helps when your therapist isn't drunk. Well, at least for our sessions, she wouldn't drink. But I would go to the, you know, I go to AA meetings, and I am Irish down to my toes. I love storytelling. And, you know, real life is happening in those rooms. The people telling these stories of, it's just one hero's journey after another. And it's about going through the fires of your inner self and your, you know, the mess you made on the outside. And coming, you know, with great courage, coming out on the other side, and these guys, their eyes would be on fire, and they're just, they were so alive, and I just really fell in love with that path, and I was very aware that I was on my own little hero's journey, and that every obstacle that came up, every fear that came up, every resentment, or anything that made me angry, or just want to cry, was all a part of the journey. That was my hero's journey, was to look at that stuff. And so in that way, I always say that my work went from being kind of just a waka waka funny person to being much more profound. And my work started to be rooted in emotional truth. And that emotional truth did not come from out here. It came from right here. When I did Christy Cummings in Best in Show, that was me as a 14-year-old saying, look at me, look at me. You know, somebody pay attention to me. I can do this. I'm good at this. And, you know, there's a thing that's on the DVD extras where I say, you know, and when I'm winning and all those guys who I, you know, grew up with back in Romulus, New York, when they see me, I hope they wish that they had been nicer to me. You know, that was so from my soul, you know. And looked at with great humor, you know, and not like, oh, suffered over. But, you know, all that dark stuff I used to great delight for myself. So, yes, it's definitely been a part of my process as an artist to unlock the real stuff as opposed to the kind of surface level. I always call it the waka waka, you know, kind of like, look how funny I can be to, like, really being grounded in something, some truth. And because that's when people started coming up to me going, I know somebody just like that person you played. And usually it's themselves. But they'll say, oh, my Aunt Edna's like that. And, you know, that's why we go to the theater, to see ourselves, whether we know it or not, and to laugh and cry, but to experience all that stuff that lives in us. I hope you're writing this down, because I am answering these questions so well right now. This guy right here, Kenny.
Oh, hi. Hi. What type of roles do you find that you enjoy more? The dramatic roles like Criminal Minds or the comedy roles like Sue Sylvester?
They are all the same to me. They really are. The world of the world of Criminal Minds is completely different than like Two and a Half Men. But I mean, I start the same way. I do the same work. I do the same work, and it's unconscious for me now. I go there automatically. I don't even have to think about it. I go to where is the Achilles heel in this person? Where is the tender spot? And, you know, doing, what's his name's mom? Reed's mom. My name was Mrs. Reed. I forget my real name, the full name. But, you know, she's, you know, suffering from a mental illness, so I had to learn about that. But I had this... what I touched on, and that was, I don't want to be overwhelmed. She can't process information, and she's so sensitive to input, and there's such tenderness in her that she thinks she will go mad, go completely mad. So that's why she kind of has to stay like this. And so that's where I start with that. And, you know, and then you take somebody like the woman in Two and a Half Men, and she's just appalled by Charlie Sheen's character. She is so afraid that her Achilles heel is that, dear God, men are like this. And, you know, how do we expect, you know, hers goes kind of macro about, you know, the women's movement, but really it's respect for women that she is constantly, you know, shoring herself up with him, and it makes for some really good comedy, because he has none. No. And yet they still really like each other, you know, so like I said, it's the same work. It's the same work, whether it's a comedy or it's a drama.
Over here. Hi, Jane. Over here. Hi.
Hi.
I'm a huge fan, and I'm so pleased to be here tonight. I'm here with Paula Pilecki from Spectrum, and, you know, I'm a speaker for the Speakers Bureau with the local LGBT Center. We go into the classroom and talk about what our experiences are like, and, you know, a lot of the stuff that comes up is about Glee, and I have a 15-year-old son and a group of little friends that come over all the time, his friends, and we talk about, you know, Glee and what's going on, and it's a really big deal. And I just wanted to hear more about how you got involved with that, and you know, how you got involved with being on the show, and how important it is to you, and how you know,
with more, the kids,
in
Glee. Yeah, it's funny. It's a happy accident that I'm in this show because it's such a callback to my own youth and the refuge I took in choir and doing the plays when I was a kid. You know, at the last day of school, hour of school was choir. So you could either go home or you could go to choir. And so many kids would take that trek. In fact, it was in a building that wasn't even attached to the other buildings of the high school. Take that trek to A building, go up the stairs and smoke a Marlboro in the bathroom together and get in about halfway through the class, but raise our voice in song. We'd have cheerleaders, we'd have woodshop guys, we'd have greasers, we'd have, you know, the scholars, everybody would come together, and it was refuge for all of us. And when I was asked to be in Glee, that's one of the things that I responded to, is that this is a place where these kids go to be understood and to be celebrated for who they are. And, you know, so you have a jock coming in who doesn't want the other jocks to know that he's singing, you know, for an hour during school, and you've got the gay kid who doesn't want anybody to know he's gay, and of course everybody does, and he finally comes out to them, and they embrace him for it, and they go through real struggles, but they embrace him, and, you know, I think that that's, it's the refuge the kids are looking for. And I knew that when I read the pilot, I thought, if this thing gets on the air, if it were lucky enough, it will have a rabid following. I did not think it would be as big and as much a phenomenon as it is, and I didn't think they'd be called Gleeks. You know, I didn't know that that was going to happen. But I know the power of, especially for kids, to come together and feel okay about yourself. And in a way, we're all still in high school. We all kind of have our own issues with that. I don't think we ever grow out of that. That's why I think adults really respond to it too. I have a friend, he's like 55, New York Jewish guy, cynical as they come. I love him, he's great, he's very entertaining. And he told me that when they started singing Don't Stop Believing, he cried, you know? And I hear that opening strain and I go, oh. And that song is so perfect. It's so perfect. It's that longing to get out of this little town and, you know, and is it dangerous out there? And yet I'm going to take the chance because, you know, I don't want to stop believing. I just love it. I think it's great. And everybody on that show is so great. And everybody knows we're breathing rarefied air with this. But, yeah, I understand why it's a phenomenon. And, you know, I take that seriously. I get stopped by kids all the time. And if I'm in the mood, I'll talk to them. No, I'm kidding. No, and it's just, I think it's just so important for kids to have this. It's just the best, you know, and the first things, programs that get cut in an economy like this is arts. And, you know, especially in California, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the public schools have basically cut out arts. And I was at my kids' fundraiser last night where we, you know, we're all rich in our neighborhood. We had like this big rock and roll band playing at our fundraiser, and we raised the money like that. But there are schools throughout Los Angeles that just don't have, you know, any arts. And that's really sad. It's such a civilizing force. But I'm really glad that Glee is around and that kids are kind of flocking to that, so at least they have that. So that's a long-winded answer, but I think a very good one. Thank you. As I beg for your appreciation.
Hi, I'm a huge fan too. I had a quick question. Being a college student and living in uncertain times, how did you get past your anxiety as a young adult?
Well, you know, I didn't really get past it. I'm writing about it at 51. I had a breakdown last night. But I will tell you this. I start the book from the point of view of if I could talk to my 20-year-old self. So let's say I'm talking to you. I would take you by the shoulders and say, don't suffer so much. Don't worry so much. Don't worry about the party being over there and you're over here. You know, I really believe right now that the most important place for me to be is exactly where I am. And you know why? Because it's exactly where I am. It's just as simple as that. Thanks. And I have great, great faith in that. And I'm here to tell you that is the best way to be happy, is to be right here, right now.
Hi, I'm Ella, and like pretty much a lot of these people, I'm a huge Gleek as well.
Great.
And I was wondering, what are your techniques for memorizing lines?
And you know, it's funny, as one gets older and into menopause, it's harder. I have run-on sentences in Glee. I have monologues that when I first look at the script, I'm like, oh, man. Because I am mouthy in Glee. And it, you know what, I drive around all day mouthing, looking like a crazy person. And it's repetition. And usually, you know what, the best way to learn your lines is to emotionally connect to them. And then they come like that. But sometimes I don't have the luxury of that, or I'm too lazy. But sometimes I will be handed and sometimes I almost like that better, that someone hands it to me and I go, oh my God, okay, well, we'll do it. And it's almost like if I have too much time, it's harder. But yeah, I think if you, the more I emotionally connect to it and act while I'm learning it, so it's not just rote, you know, I'm just trying to do it rote, but I have some kind of a connection as I'm doing it, it comes much easier. So that's my advice to you.
Speaking of high school, hi Jane, it's Janice Evans.
Oh my God! Hi!
Hi, how are you?
And you went out with Rich Roper.
What's that?
You went out with Rich Roper, right?
I did.
Yeah, remember
Rich
Roper?
Oh God.
Hi! We called you Panis.
Thank you. But speaking of high school.
What are you doing here?
Seeing you, congratulating you. I'm congratulating you. Just
thank you, Janice. I'm gay.
I know.
Is that all right? You probably knew.
And we took tap dancing classes together. But I'm here to attest that you were not crazy or out of control in high school. She was a sweetheart. She was funny. She was well loved. And I just have a little funny story, though. When I lived in Denver when Fugitive came out, and I went to the theater and had a big thing of popcorn, and I'm sitting there, and you know how you see people out of context, and you're going, I know her. And she comes on screen, and I get up. Of course, it's all dark, and it's an intense scene, and she's looking through the microscope, and I said, that's Jane Lynch! Spilled the popcorn all over everybody, but anyway, I've been following you ever since and love you.
Love you too, Janice. It's so good to see you. Are you getting hot flashes yet? Yeah. Man. Do you have kids? Oh, congratulations. That's great. Julie has 4. Yeah. What? Oh, you're on Facebook with her. Yeah. Cool. And I talk about in the book about this group of girls that I hung out with, about 14 girls, and Janice was one of them. Yeah. She was the cute one. Cute.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Erin.
Hello.
Hello. I'm over here.
Hello.
So, I absolutely love Glee, and I love Sue. So.
Thank you.
Yes. And my question is,
If you could do any musical number and sing it on Glee, what would it be and why?
Oh, you know what I'd love to sing? Do you know who Peggy Lee is?
No.
And I was just listening to this song. Is that all there is? So this is how I picture it. Sue wins, and she's a congresswoman. She destroys the Glee Club. She wins the lottery, and she's having this big party, and all the confetti comes down, and she looks into the camera. Is that all there is? Isn't that good? That, and in my fantasy, I would like to do Bosom Buddies with, like, Megan Mullally. Wouldn't that be funny? She's, like, this tall. It would be great. Yes. Go ahead. You can do it without a microphone. Yeah. Atta girl.
I'm an assistant basketball coach here.
Great. Right, you know, because I'm a character actress, as far as I, unless it's behind my back, I don't think it has affected me one way or the other, and perhaps has been a plus. I'm 6 feet tall, and I did get recruited out of the hall in high school to be on the basketball team, and I was the center, and I was not very good. Yes, hon. Yeah.
Now that on Glee, there's a lot of people that are mentally challenged that aren't the butt of the joke.
Right.
What's it like working with the actress who played your sister and the actress who plays Becky?
Yeah.
It's like the best mentally challenged evil character.
Isn't she? And aren't you glad they didn't make her like all sunshiny and light? Ooh, she's mean. She can be mean. She is definitely Sue Sylvester's protege. Lauren is fantastic, and Lauren has perhaps the best mother on earth, too. I mean, she's a nurse, and she's, the moment Lauren was born, she was out there, you know, finding services. Lauren is so high functioning, you know, she hasn't, so much is expected from her. She's loved and nurtured, and they're a great family. And Robin Trockey, who played my sister, is about 56 years old, and that's rather old for a person with Down syndrome. They tend to live shorter lives, and she's just wonderful, and she's great, and she has a wonderful sister. You know, you see the people around them, and I'm filled with praise for them. They're just really fabulous people. And Robin and Lauren are great, too. They learn their lines. They're just, you know, they're right on. They're just great.
Oh.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Sophie. My question for you is, how did you happen to get the role on Glee? Mm-hmm. And what advice do you have for people that want to be actors?
The advice I have for people who want to be actors is almost like I have no advice. I get kind of airy-fairy and esoteric here. It really, truly, it's do what's in front of you. You know, do what's in front of you, and there is no set path. You're going to have your own, and if you tried to follow mine, you'd be doing yourself a disservice. And this is stuff that I have just only recently figured out, that, you know, there is no secret. There are no keys to the kingdom. There is nobody who's going to swoop down and deprive you of this journey. Just say yeah to everything except porno. That's all I say. And how did I get the role in Glee? I was doing Mr. Troop Mom. I was trying to remember the name of that movie with George Lopez in Vancouver. And I've worked with Ryan Murphy before, and he sent me the script and said he wanted me to play this particular character, who was described thusly. Sue Sylvester may or may not have posed for Penthouse, may or may not be on horse estrogen. And I said, I have to play this woman. And I was actually contracted to do another pilot. I had done another pilot. And I couldn't be a regular on Glee, so they allowed me to do the pilot as a guest star. In fact, the first five episodes of Glee, I was a guest star until that deal, thankfully, fell apart. And then I got to stay at Glee, so that's how I got the part. But I've known Ryan Murphy for about 10 years. He's the guy who wrote it. Our Lord and Creator.
Hey, Jane, in the back with the microphone.
Hey.
It's cool being in the same space as you. It's I've been a fan for a long time.
Oh, thank you.
I have a nerdy, specific question. Me and my fiance here are big Party Down fans.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah.
If you guys never have heard of this show, you got to watch it. It's amazing.
I was just telling some folks here, and they had never heard of it.
It's criminal, but I just want to know, is Constance Carmel, is she going to come back? Are we going to see more of her?
I think so. Let me tell you. And then
can you give us a secret?
Don't tell anybody.
We won't tell anybody else. Just between me and you, will I see Constance?
Yeah, just between the two of us.
Yeah.
We are, I think we're going to do a movie. And which would be great. And, that was the happiest accident of casting that ever occurred. It was a show we did on the Starz Network. No one saw it. It's now becoming kind of a cult classic. But we were caterers, and we went from party to party. Every episode, the name of our company was Party Down, our catering company. And we would go to a different party every week, and it was kind of our trials and tribulations. It was a group of people who wanted to be anywhere except where they were. They wanted to be actors or writers or something to do with the business in a general or more specific sense. And so they were just, biding their time and paying their rent catering. And it was a lot of fun. Adam Scott, Ryan Hansen, Ken Marino, Lizzie Kaplan, me, Megan Mullally replaced me the next season. And so it looks like, and then the last episode of the second season was my wedding, Constance Carmel's wedding. And Constance Carmel lives in the soft cotton place. It was actually a relief to play her. She has no cynicism, and she's very stupid. And kind of has glorified her past as basically an extra. She was kind of an extra in the 80s. And, kind of fancies herself a veteran of the cinema. But anyway, it's a really good show, and it's, do you know where you can see it? Netflix? Yeah, it's worth it. It's, they're really fast and funny, and Martin's star is also in it. He was the other cast member, I forgot. But it's, it's pretty hilarious. Pretty hilarious. And I said Adam Scott, right? Yeah.
Hi, this end?
Yes.
I have two different questions in two different categories.
Well, all right.
One is, have you thought about going into, you've been writing, have you thought of going into production or writing any, putting out any of your own material? And also whether as an actress, do you get to contribute your own thoughts about to the productions that you're in?
Right.
And then a completely different question, are you at all involved in any political campaigns or issues or politicians that you're particularly pushing for?
Not so much political, no. I'll vote, but not so much political. Wow, that was actually three, but it's okay. What was the first one? Do I writing and directing? You know what? I am kind of sated. I feel really good. I don't have that burning drive to do anything, actually. I can barely get here tonight. I kind of feel like I need a little bit of a rest. But I love doing Glee. And do I write? On Glee, no. Ian Brennan is the mastermind, the evil mastermind who created Sue Sylvester. And he writes every bit of my dialogue. He's about 15, 16 years younger than I am. He's from Chicago, where I'm from as well, as Panis is. And he is just amazing. Smart. He says he rolls his eyes into the back of his head to come up with my dialogue. And and then if you were to meet him, he's like the nicest guy in the world. He's kind of self-effacing and just really sweetheart. So I don't touch it. Every once in a while I might say, oh, can I say blah, 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 and they humor me and then it's cut. And it's funny, if I want to change one word, the script girl's over in the corner calling him. Jane wants to, flip this preposition and blah, 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 blah. No, sorry. So no, they don't listen to me at all. I have no desire. Like I said, I'm sated. I'm done. They can write anything they want for me. And I think that was it. Right. Yes, darling, why don't you go with this girl here? My kid wants to be an actor. And, I've only known my kid for 2.5 years. And already I take full credit for everything that's wonderful about her, and she is a wonderful kid. She's, you know, like I said, I'm a dog person. I've not been one for kids. And if you had to design a child for me, it would be this little girl. Her name is Hayden. And she is the most resilient, sweet, big-hearted, diplomatic person I've ever met in my life. And yet she wants to be an actress, and she spent the summer at, you know, she wants to get paid for it. So she's like, well, you know, you get paid for it. You know, I paid my dues, kid. She was at a youth camp for drama over the summer, and she did Les Mis. And she, yeah, she did Master of the House, because there are no little boys who want to do this theater camp. And she did Rosie and Bye Bye Birdie. And she's doing Grease now. She's playing Patty Simcox. So I know. And she'll be 10 on Saturday. So, yeah, I think she wants to do this, at least for right now. I mean, and, you know, I'm not going to, like, get her an agent. She will go to school and be a normal little girl. But, yeah, she, I think, do you want to be in the theater? Do you? Yeah, you want to, are you doing plays now? Great. What kind? What do you want to do? What do you like to do? Yeah, but what do you like to do? See, that's the thing. I'm going to work with this kid now just for a second. But what do you like about the movies? Pretending? To act. Do you like to pretend? Yeah. Okay. Do you like to be funny?
Yeah, I like to be funny.
Good. Okay. See, it's the specificity. Because if you're like, I want to be famous, and then that's no fun. I mean, it is fun to be famous. But it's also fun to pretend, and basically I get paid to play house for the rest of my life, and so you can too. Anything else?
Hi.
Yes, sir. Just chat. Yes.
And I was just wondering what it was like to work with such a great legend as your mother,
Audrey. Yes. You know, I say in the book, I talk about my fascination and obsession with the Carol Burnett Show, and she's just my hero. And, you know, as I've gotten to know her, she's more and more my hero. You know, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was the kind of the beginnings of my desire to be an ensemble member of a comedy troupe, which I have become. You know, everything I do is basically ensemble. And one of the things that I love about her, and this is learning as I've come to know her, is, you know, it was the Carol Burnett Show, but you remember, and equal time was given to Lyle Wagner and Vicki Lawrence and Harvey Korman and Tim Conway. You know who they are because of the generosity and the desire for Carol Burnett to celebrate them. She didn't have to. It could have been the Carol Burnett Show with these guys kind of her supporting players, but they were as amazing as she was, and she would step back for them, they would step back for her, and, you know, everybody took their turn in the spotlight, and that's who she is. She's the most generous person in the world and very sweet, and, you know, she loves to write, and so when we were doing this book, I thought, dare I? And because I'm a person who says yes, I called her and I said, would you write this forward? And she said, absolutely. Not only did she write it, she went into the booth and recorded it for the audio. So she's really amazing. She's a wonderful, wonderful person, and I'm so lucky to call her a friend. So she's pretty amazing, and thank you for asking. I love being able to, tell people how fabulous this woman is.
Hi.
Hello.
Over here. My name's Ella, and I love acting myself. I'm right here.
Oh, hey, baby.
So I was just wondering how you get into character before you shoot a scene.
How I get into character?
Yeah, how do you?
Well, at this point, it's kind of automatic. When I was starting out, it's funny. In terms of technique now, it's kind of unconscious. I kind of just go into it. I kind of know what I need to do to get myself there, but if I were to break it down consciously, especially in the beginning when I was first, a lot of it was the tracksuit, when I put the tracksuit on, and that was Ryan Murphy's idea. He said, I want her in tracksuits, they can change colors, but it has to be a tracksuit every time. I started to see her tracksuit as her armor, and she's a warrior, and she's always looking for the battle, and if there isn't a battle, she will make one up. She will create one out of whole cloth. So I just go into war mode. It's like, I'm looking for it. Where is it? Who wants to mess with this? And when you come from that point of view, all good things flow.
Hi.
Hi.
it's not part of my usual Sunday ritual, so it was probably a happy accident that I read the wedding announcements a while ago in the Sunday Times, and I read about you. And my memory is such that I don't remember the details, but I remember how it made me feel. And I loved reading about your wedding, and I'm hoping you'll tell us about your wife.
Yeah, you now? Well, she's in the book, but I was going to San Francisco. Oh, if I'm here now. And do you know the National Center for Lesbian Rights, NCLR? Kate Kendall, she's like my hero. I was giving Eileen Chaikin an award, who is the creator of the L word. And Eileen had created my character on that show, Joyce Wishnia, kind of based, not so much personality-wise on Kate, who's like the nicest person in the world, but just this kind of pioneering human rights lawyer was kind of based on the work that NCLR does. So it was, she thought it was only fitting that I give her the award. I completely agreed, and so I showed up. I was perfect for it. And Laura was there accepting an award for, she was living in Florida, for the work she had done to have gay adoptions recognized in Florida where gay people cannot adopt. So out-of-state adoptions by gay people now have to be honored in Florida, which is a great, she did great work. So that's where we met, and it was truly, you know, love at first sight, and we were immediately smitten and made out in her hotel room that night. And she flew back to Florida, and I went back to Los Angeles, and before I left her, I sang, "When will I see you again?" She was totally charmed. And we just figured out, you know, how to see each other, and then before you know it, we pretty much knew right away we wanted to get, not so much married, I knew I wanted to be with her. And she's 9 years younger than I am, so she's from that generation right there that has an entitlement of like, well, of course we're getting married. Whereas I was like, that's for straight people. We don't want to get the straight people mad. And she's like, that. And she said, I've got a kid, I'm not fooling around. I'm not going to move across the country and just live with you. I was like, all right. So she went to Smith, and so Northampton is special to her. All lesbians go to Smith, I guess. And all smart ones. And and we got married in a restaurant there, and it was great. And we had like 5 wedding parties around the country, and at our different, those were hell. That was the hard part, because we didn't invite any family to the wedding, and we said, we'll just have parties, and we were still partying for like a year. You know, after, oh God, now we have to go do the Chicago party. But they're over now, and it's all good. And you know, she's great. I said this, she wrote this book with me. She's, you know, this book would not be here without Laura Embry. So there.
Ms. Lynch?
Yeah.
I have a question about web therapy, which I'm crazy about. And I'm wondering if you might invoke your Irish storytelling to give us a little perspective on the behind the scenes at that show.
Oh, that's funny, because it happened so fast. It was like an hour. We did it in an hour. Lisa Kudrow does these, and at the time they're on Showtime now. But at the time it was just this idea that she had. I did mine about 2.5-3 years ago, where she does, her character does therapy via the internet. And so I played this raging, crazy CEO of some company who has been sentenced by the courts, court-ordered therapy. And so that's all I remember about it, is just throwing things and yelling at her. But I know Meryl Streep did one. Did you know that? Yeah. She was literally in we were in an office, we were at her house, actually, and she was at a computer in, you know, like her bedroom, and I was at a computer in her office, but we could see each other. So it was very realistic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's hot. Yes, sure. Oh, I'm sorry, we'll make it 2. You, and then move on. Oh, okay, very good. My favorite episode of Glee and why? Oh, you know, the first season had so many good ones. The second season, not so much. Don't tweet that. Oh, what did we do in the first season that was so awesome? Start yelling some out. Okay, Madonna. But there were some that had some really deep, wonderful... Who? Oh, yeah, that was good. That wasn't so deep. But what was Funeral? That was big for me, right? What was that? Oh, that was... What? My sister's funeral. What was that? Wheels. Wheels was an awesome episode where the kids are all in the wheelchairs and something awesome for Sue Sylvester, too. What was it? Oh, I can't remember. Funeral and Wheels, and I forget. Huh? Right. But what did Sue Sylvester do? I what? Oh, I paid for it. Hmm. Okay. Probably that, yeah. So funny. I thought the first season there were some epic episodes. Can you say epic episodes? Well, I just did. Okay. Yes.
I'm the last person, but I just wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, this really isn't a question, but I have probably seen everything you've done at least 10 times. I know every bit of your dialogue from Best of Show, from everything. But recently, when you've been on this Glee show, I watch it with my daughter, which is like such an unusual thing you can do to be able to watch television that actually works for a lot of different people in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And there's hardly ever a time where when you're on that screen, I, as a woman, don't feel like, God, I want to be just like that. You know, I just want to empower myself like you empower yourself. And I just think, you know, I know you're with the gay and all the stuff you do.
I'm with the gay,
yeah, with
yes.
All, you know, and all that. You know, but I know you stand for empowering women and all that kind of stuff. But I just want you to know,
thank you.
I am always wanting to be more powerful. I think to myself, God, I wish I could be as free as you are. I could be as powerful as you are. You are just
me as a person?
Yeah, no, well, you know what? I would not have known until tonight, yes, you as a person, because you're being just as free tonight as you are in every one of those characters that I watch. Oh. For all the years that I've watched, I didn't know until tonight that you really are this way. But it really is a remarkable contribution for people to be able to watch you and to watch you be so yourself in every role.
Thank you.
And really, we're all sitting here going, thank you for sharing yourself so completely tonight in such a brilliant way. And once again, I just want to be more myself every time I'm around you in any capacity,
good.
Whether it's
good.
On TV or in a
movie. Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you. Thanks. Good? Well, thank you so much, everybody.
Hello?
Wow. Remember, if you want your book signed, please wait in your row so we can have some order here. We're going to come up this side, not this side. Yeah, one more time. Watch it too. Let my day.